Sheena C. Howard is a professor of communications. She is an award-winning author, filmmaker, and scholar. In 2014, Sheena became the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award for her first book, Black Comics: Politics of Race and Representation. She is also the author of several other critically acclaimed books and comic books on a range of different topics. Sheena is a writer and image activist with a passion for telling stories through various mediums that encourage audiences to consider narratives that are different than their own. In 2016, through her company Nerdworks, Sheena directed, produced, and wrote the documentary Remixing Colorblind, which explores the ways the educational system shapes our perception of race and others. Sheena is here with us today to share her inspiring story from collegiate athlete through her PhD and now as a professor, author, producer, and TEDx speaker on a mission to highlight social justice, diversity, representation, and self-empowerment. Let's take a listen. Okay, so I have with me here today Sheena Howard. How are you, Sheena?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here today. I'm really excited to share with my listeners lots of incredible stuff that you've been doing. So let's start. We're going to take it actually way back to your high school experience, because just to let my listeners know, my dad was your high school history teacher, right?
Yes.
And he has had nothing but incredible things to say about you. So I'm so excited to dive into this interview. You were an athlete in high school. Can you tell us more about that and how it led to your college experience as a Division I athlete?
Definitely. Yes, I am a sports Hall of Famer at West Catholic. I did cross country, track, volleyball, basketball, and soccer. And you know, sports has really affected me positively all the way up until today. I mean, the physical stuff that it does to your body, because I played sports in college as a Division I athlete, like you mentioned. And I just feel like taking care of your body and working out has like benefited me even like 15, 20 years down the line, right? But then just the mental strength that you get from playing sports is amazing. Like it just sets you up to deal with adversity. It sets you up to understand teamwork, but also how to be an individual within a team, right? How to still be yourself within a group and be okay with being yourself within a group, as opposed to just following along what the group does. And I think that's a big part of my story, as I'm sure we'll get into in this interview. Division I basketball was tough. I mean, in college, basketball started to feel like a job instead of like I'm doing this purely for fun, as it was in high school. And I ended up getting hurt in college. I broke my wrist twice. You know, that's like the typical athlete story, like a dream, like deferred type thing where it's like, oh, I got hurt. And then like all of my basketball dreams went out the window, right? It's basically what happened. And it was just so bad. I ended up getting kicked off the basketball team in college my junior year. And I was on a full scholarship. So that was adversity, right? I had to deal with that. I had to get that back. And then, yeah, I ended up finishing my career as a Division II basketball player at New York Institute of Technology.
Wow. That really is a major thing to come up against in your college years, because just like you said, you have so much wrapped up in, you know, all the time and energy that you put into your sport in a Division I setting. Right. I could imagine that was really hard to get through that. But at what point in college did your goals for your future career start to take shape? And what was it that led you to Howard, where you acquired your PhD?
So I always liked school. So even though people in high school would remember me for sports, I always liked school and I was always good at school. Like in high school, I was in AP classes, track one, all of that. I liked learning. I didn't really like history that much. Sorry, Mr. Stonebridge. I love him, but I didn't like history that much. But when I went to Howard for my PhD, I loved history because history was taught from an African-American perspective, and all of the things that I had learned about history in the Catholic school system were taught to me not from the position of those in power, but from the position of African American stories. And so Howard is a really pivotal point in my life in helping me figure out sort of what I wanted to do with my life, who I wanted to be, and where I can make a difference in my community.
That's fantastic. And let's get into that, because the impact that you then went on to make is quite significant, and you continue to do that. In 2014, you became the first Black woman to win an Eisner Award. Am I saying that correctly?
Yes.
Eisner Award. Okay. For your first book, Black Comics, Politics of Race and Representation. Can you tell us more about what inspired you to write that book and the experience of receiving that prestigious award?
Yes. So at Howard, I was doing my PhD, but I was only 23 years old doing my PhD. So I was really young. Like, I was in class with like 30-year-olds, and like a lot of them had it all figured out. Like, they knew what they knew what they wanted to study. They knew what they wanted to write a dissertation on. And I had no idea. Like, I knew I was supposed to be at Howard, and I really didn't know what I wanted to do in the real world, which is why I just stayed in school. And I had like a calling to go to Howard. Something was just like, you have to go to Howard.
Wow. And you were so young.
Yes. Very young. Wow. Right. And I was teaching undergrads because they paid for my tuition while I taught undergrad. So yeah, that was a whole thing.
That's amazing.
Right. Right. But as a 23-year-old, like, I didn't know what I wanted to do my dissertation on. I didn't know any of those things. And so when it, and the year one, they're like, you need to know what you want to write your dissertation on 3 or 4 years down the line. So I was like, okay, I just started looking at what am I interested in now? And I was reading the Boondocks comic strip. Like, that was what I was interested in at that moment as a 23-year-old. I'm like, oh, I keep reading this Boondocks comic strip. And so I did my dissertation on the Boondocks comic strip, looking at gender dynamics in the comic strip, and then in Black comics broadly, but also African-American communication dynamics in the comic strip. And unfortunately, what I found when I was doing my research is there were no books that documented the history of African Americans' contributions to the field of comics. And so I was in the Howard University library in the basement just looking for, I just wanted a book that said African Americans in comics, a history, right? Something like that. And there was nothing. And I did find this book called, like, American History of Comics or something like that. And it didn't mention any Black people. So I'm like, if I'm at Howard University and there is no book that just gives me a timeline of the contributions of African Americans in comics, like, this is like, I'm like, this is an injustice. This is what I need to write my first book on. And so that's how I put together Black Comics, Politics of Race and Representation. And, you know, there's a lot of contributors that wrote chapters in that book. Because, you know, I don't know everything about comics. I don't know everything about anything. And I wanted the book to be a comprehensive look at sort of race and the history of comics and the politics of identity in comics.
Wow. I love that the book didn't exist, so you wrote it.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
It's incredible.
I just posted something on my Instagram, because a lot of times when we're talking about comics in interviews and stuff, people will ask me like, oh, what would your superpower be if you had one? And I just posted on Instagram, I already have a superpower. Everybody does. I turn the invisible into the visible, and everybody has the ability to do that. Everybody has a superpower.
I love that.
Right?
I love that. Wow, that's awesome. It's just so inspirational that that's how you came to write this award-winning book. So what was it like for you to receive that award after this really was just something that you kind of followed this natural path to create?
Right. It was unexpected, totally unexpected. You know, I wasn't inundated in the comics field before that. Like, if you talk to a real comics fan, like, they've been reading this stuff since they were 7. They know page 12, issue number 1 of the Superman comic. That wasn't me, right? I'm looking at this from an academic cultural perspective, coming in as a 23-year-old writing this stuff. But I don't know if anybody has any video of my speech from winning the Eisner Award, but it wasn't a speech. I was just like crying, like, oh, because I couldn't believe it. Like, it was so unexpected. And it was amazing. And that definitely shaped my career. And, you know, when you get a big recognition like that, it's validation, right? It's validation and it's inspiration to give you motivation to keep going.
Right. And that helped propel you to all the other avenues that you went down going forward, I would imagine.
Yes.
So you also wrote, directed, and produced the documentary called Remixing Colorblind. Can you tell us more about that film and what you had hoped to achieve with that film?
Yeah, so that film actually premiered at the Landmark Theater in Philadelphia to a sold-out theater in 2016, and it was my first film. And really, what I was trying to do, there's information out there about race in higher education and how race shapes our perceptions, how race and education shape our perception of the world and others and who we are. So I was trying to think about a way where I can take the research around race issues in education and just repackage it in a different way for the masses to be able to participate in a dialogue about race in higher education. And so that was really from a young person's perspective. So the documentary Remixing Colorblind, there's some notable scholars in the film, but it's like student driven. And we're talking about things around how their racial identity and how education has impacted their racial identity, right? When you're filling out an application to college, which box do you check, right? Are you Black, white, other, mixed, whatever it is? If you're a biracial student, how does checking the box, you know, what's your thought process when you have to check a box, and what do you think that means, and why do you make the selections that you do? And then it also delves into our perceptions of HBCUs and all of those things. So I actually went to West Catholic and interviewed seniors at West Catholic as they were, you know, thinking about college. And the interesting thing is when I went to West Catholic, it was like 70%, I'd say 70% white, 30% Black. And like the demographics of the school had like completely shifted. I think it was like I interviewed the one white kid at West Catholic that was graduating, right? Everybody else in the class was Black. So I thought that was like really interesting.
Yeah. I mean, how much time had passed since when you graduated and when you went back to do those interviews?
I graduated at West Catholic in 2001. And I did those interviews in 2015, 2016.
Wow. So, yeah, I mean, that's not a very long period of time, but, you know, a lot shifted in that time frame.
Exactly.
Wow. That's awesome. And I love that you were able to go back to somewhere that was so personal for you and kind of dive back in and ask those questions.
Yeah, and that was the documentary was also a personal exploration because I was trying. So I went to all of the schools that I had been affiliated with and interviewed those students. So I interviewed Howard University students. They had a lot to say in the film, West Catholic, because I was also trying to understand how me as a Black female, you know, was able to become a tenured professor at this private university when so few of us are able to make tenure as Black women or as Black people in academia. So I was also trying to understand my journey and how the schools that I went to impacted my eventual success in my career choice. So it was like a personal exploration as well.
That's powerful because that just makes the story come to life because of how personal it is. So you are a writer and image activist with a passion for telling stories, as we're learning here, through various mediums that encourage audiences to consider narratives that are different than their own. So as an author of several critically acclaimed books now, what would you say drives you the most in terms of the impact you're hoping to make with your work?
So, you know, for me, I feel like when you listen to like successful writers, they talk about how much they love writing and they love the journey, and like the journey and writing the thing is the thing that helps them get through writing the book. For me, it is not that. For me, writing is hard. I'm great at it, right? I have a natural talent for it, but it's difficult. It's hard. The thing that gets me through writing anything or creating anything is I visualize the person that I want to impact holding the book, even if it's a film, like when it gets hard, I'm like, man, I do not feel like writing today. Like, oh my goodness, doing this documentary is so difficult. I literally visualize the person that I want to impact. And that gets me through. And I visualize like the final product. So I'm not a person that's like, oh, the journey is who is so amazing. It's about who you become. No, I just want the thing out there so I can make the impact.
That is great. Great advice. Honestly, we have some commonalities here. I also produced a documentary, and it premiered at the same place yours did.
Nice.
This was like 10 years ago. And I'm a writer too, a writer and a producer and just a creative. And I couldn't agree with you more that the process actually makes me want to pull my hair out.
It's so hard.
But it's that the impact that you want to make is ultimately what drives you. And that's what I think being passion driven is all about. Like, if you have the passion to create, you're driven by that passion, no matter how hard it gets or no matter how tired you are or how much you don't want to sit there and write that day.
Right. I'm driven by the value that it's going to add to somebody's life. But I will say writing comics is different. Writing comics can be hard, but I actually do enjoy that writing. I enjoy writing. Like, literally, when I write comic scripts, I feel like I can literally feel my brain expanding. Like, it's like writing a comic script is like using every part of your brain. It's the writing, it's the technical stuff, then it's the creative stuff, then you have to put yourself in the lens of the artist. And like, I do enjoy that process. Better than the process though.
Yeah, that sounds really hard though. So like, why do you think that writing the comics has a different feel for you? Like, is it that it's kind of like with humor or lighthearted, or is it like, what is it that feels a little different about that?
With comics, the rewards of your work are quicker for me. So like when I wrote my book, Nina's Whisper, about same-sex domestic abuse, you know, that it took me a while to write. Like, it's a fiction, single-authored book. And the reward for me doesn't come till after the thing is published. So that could take a year. But for comics, the award, I can write them quicker and the reward is more immediate. So even if it takes me like 4 months to write in 100-page graphic novel, you know, along the way, you're sending parts of that script to the artist and you're being able to see as you're going proofs of the artwork. So even if I'm like on page 75, at least I get to see some of the artwork from page 25. So it's like you get more immediate results. And
that makes sense.
I like that.
That totally makes sense. And so you recently gave a TEDx speech titled 3 Self-Empowerment Truths That Will Set You Free. Can you tell us more about that experience and what inspired that speech?
Yeah. So I have been asked to do a TED talk previously, and I turned down the opportunity because it wasn't the right time. I felt like it was backwards. For me, I felt like it shouldn't be that someone asked me to do a TED talk, then I come up with the topic, because that means I'm just doing it for the opportunity. And I didn't want to force a topic out of myself, because a TEDx talk was really important to me. And it's something that's going to live on forever. And so for me, I was like, when I'm ready to do a TEDx talk, the topic will just come to me one day. Like, it'll just come. I won't have to think about it. I'll just wake up and it'll come. And so a lot of time had passed between getting this opportunity and turning it down. I was beating myself up. Like, when is the topic going to come? Like, come on. And then it happened. One day I was listening to someone else's TED talk. And after I listened to it, I went home and I wrote my TED talk. I wrote it all out, and that was it. And then, I pitched myself to the TEDx organizer on August 22nd, and on August 23rd, they said I was accepted. So it's like your intuition is real. You got to follow it. You have to trust yourself.
Ooh, I preach that. That is like my number one topic I love to talk about, is following your intuition. And as you were telling that story, I'm like goosebumps, because I love the fact that you were self-aware enough to say, now's not the time. You know, most people would jump at that opportunity immediately and not care what they were going to talk about. Right. They'd just be happy to have the platform and the stage and that acknowledgement that, you know, TEDx is a huge platform. But for you to say, not yet, and I'm going to wait for it to come to me, that's like deeply trusting your intuition.
Yeah. And you know, I teach, I do academic coaching and branding. So I help academics get media coverage and visibility. And I teach how to land a TEDx talk. And when people, you know, the tough part is coaching. When someone says, well, how do I come up with an idea? It's hard for them to accept, like, you got to do it when you're ready. If you don't know what the idea is, you have to wait until you're ready. And you'll know when you're ready. Like that, you know, that's not a 1+1=2 answer. That's a trust yourself answer.
But that's great advice, because I would imagine that doing it from an intuitive place, as opposed to like just jumping at that first opportunity, you're going to be able to produce a more authentic result, right?
There you go. Exactly. Exactly. And so I know that the TED talk that I gave was the one that I was supposed to give. And the one 10 years from now, when I look back on it, I'm going to say, yeah, like I'm still going to feel the same way I feel about it today.
Wow. That's awesome. That's awesome. It gave me goosebumps when you said that, because I just think that that's great advice. And that's a really great example to set too for those that you're teaching, right, to help them really identify what matters and what it is that your voice, what you want your voice to be saying, and what's the impact exactly you actually want to make. Yep. And to not be driven by, like, you know, the quick, you know, dangling carrot that your ego wants to take.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
Be a little more true to yourself.
Yes,
so
exactly.
On this podcast, we often discuss the topic of compassion. Mm. So I like to ask each of my guests to give us their own definition of compassion. So in your own words, would you tell us, you know, the importance of compassion, what you think compassion is, and how it relates to the work that you do?
So I think compassion is being a part of an ecosystem that is moving towards ending suffering for all sentient beings. But you can't live your life, you know, wanting to end suffering without having self-compassion. So you have to love yourself. You have to tell yourself it's going to be okay. When you mess up, you have to say, hey, Sheena, you messed up. It's okay. You're going to do better next time, right? You have to have self-compassion, right? A lot of times we think about compassion as something that we give to someone else, but you have to give it to yourself first. And I think that's part of what my TED talk was about. You know, I didn't love myself enough, right? I didn't love myself enough to avoid the situation that I got myself in. Right? Not letting someone who did you wrong off the hook, not letting an abuser off the hook, but think about it, right? There are certain decisions that you make when you love yourself and you have compassion for yourself. And then there's other decisions that you make when you don't. And we know which decisions will be better for you in the long run. It's the decisions that are based on you first loving yourself and having compassion for yourself.
Wow. I love that answer. Thank you. Thank you for sharing that. We also discuss community a lot on this podcast. How important would you say the aspect of community has been for you personally, and how do you hope to facilitate community through the work that you do?
I think, this is a good question for me now at this stage in my life, because I think a lot of the things that I was doing in the past were like, in a vacuum, like, I want to do this. All right, get a PhD, get a job, write this book because I want to write it. And now I'm more interested in what value can I bring to the world? What value can I bring to this podcast, right? Like setting an intention before the podcast. Who do I want to show up as, right? I want to bring light and love to Christie's podcast, right? So I think I'm just in a place where, what value can I bring to the world? How can I make it a better place? And how can I be of service and value? And I feel like when you start to be of value to other people, more opportunities come. You actually make more money that way, right? When you're just showing up like, hey, how can I support you? What can I do for you? Right?
Right. It's about being coming from a place of service and wanting to, you know, help. You're making an impact, but you're also wanting to have the why behind what you're doing.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Exactly.
So what are the greatest takeaways you'd like to leave my listeners with when it comes to race, diversity, and representation?
Woo, the biggest takeaways when it comes to race, diversity, and representation? That's a big question.
I know, I'm sorry. And not one that's easy to answer in a couple of minutes.
Yeah, but so I'm going to answer it for Black people, right? Because I think a lot of times when we talk about race, it's really about how we can make white people feel better, right? Like, how can I sympathize and not hurt this white person's feelings? So my answer about, race representation, what was the third one?
Race, diversity, and representation.
It's for Black people because we have to learn to live in this world and be the best version of ourselves with the system that we have. And we didn't create this system. We're living in a system that is the imagination of the founding fathers, created during a time where, Black people were not taken into consideration. So how do we live in this world as Black people? And I would say, number one is take care of yourself, right? You can't do anything great if you're unhealthy. And my last book was Why Wakanda Matters. What Black Panther reveals about communication, identity, and psychology. And that's all about what Black people can learn about mental health and taking care of their mental health from the movie Black Panther. So I would say for Black people, take care of yourself. Mentally, physically, and spiritually, right? However you need to do that. The second thing is reframe the way you think about money, right? If you're like me and you're Black and you grew up in Philadelphia, mostly everything you know about money and making money is unhealthy, right? Reframe how you think and feel about money, right? Money's not a bad thing. It's a good thing. And the more money you can make, the more impact you can have, right? And then the third thing, because money is critical to surviving in a racist society, right? It's just, we have to have it collectively, right? Regardless of what's going on. So we're not dependent on institutions and organizations, right? And then the third thing I would say is, the third one, man, this is tough because I got to narrow it down to one more. Find your community. Yeah, find a community of people and find relationships that are supportive of you, right? Don't keep toxic friends or people around you, right? Keep people around you that are going to be uplifting and supportive. So, yeah.
Thank you so much, because I know that was a very heavy question to end.
That was.
A
tough one.
I know, sorry. But I think that, and as I was researching all that you've done, I feel like that's really a common theme of what you speak about and what your message is. And I think it's really just so important, everything that you just said, in terms of answering that from that exact perspective. Because
thank you.
Not only for anyone who's, Black who's listening to this, kind of even more so importantly for anyone who's white who's listening to this, to understand what that looks like through your lens, and why it's important that we also be really aware of how you have to navigate exactly what you said you have to navigate and the way that things are structured. So thank you so much for taking the time to be here today. I can't thank you enough, because I think that you're incredibly inspiring. Just the path that you've taken is really, really inspiring. And I'm going to encourage all my listeners to read your books, to watch your TED Talk, to watch your documentary, because we can all learn a lot from everything that you've produced this far. And I'm so excited to see what you continue to produce going forward. So thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Be the Good Podcast. Please like, comment, and share, and be sure to follow us on Instagram at Be the Good Podcast. And remember, we can all find our own way to be the good.